you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Dear gas prices, go take a hike. Toyota's hybrid lineup brings efficiency with power, savings with style, and tons of top tech. Think you can stand in our way? Think again. Toyota Hybrids. Toyota. Let's go places. Welcome to the Bulls Talk Podcast, brought to you by Toyota. I am your host for today, Tony Gill, and along with me are my friends, Bulls insider Casey Johnson, and the person that you guys know, but you don't know, Tori. I've never asked how you pronounce your last name.
Oh my God, it's Rubenstein.
Rubenstein.
I do. Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
The secret behind Bulls Talk Twitter.
Yes, that is true. So I am the person behind Bulls Talk Twitter on most game days and most days. And also most of the other.
You can tell by Twitter the spice accounts. who's on Bulls Talk Twitter.
Yeah.
So blame her.
Secrets
blame
out. Her. If anybody ever misspells anything, it's me. If you see. Which happens on occasion.
So, I mean, we're going to have a good episode today. It's going to be fun, but we got to talk about some not so fun things, particularly Zach LaVine and his hand.
Yeah.
We saw it taped up and wrapped up during the Pacers game, and it seems to have obviously impacted the way he played, not shooting very well in that Pacers game. So, KC, you being the insider, any updates or anything about that hand? It seemed to hamper him very significantly.
Well, let's put it into context. So it happened in the Washington game near the end of that game. We were made aware of it. We talked to him about it several times. Let's put this on the docket first. Mm-hmm. He's not even on the injury report.
Okay.
Like ever. Okay.
Yeah.
When he was, which was in the direct aftermath of the injury, he was listed as probable. So I'm not diminishing this injury, especially because it has progressed from him not wearing a brace to wearing a brace. The actual first game that he did that was in Paris against the Pistons. And then I talked to him about it after the Indiana game just because he's 6-for-36 from three since the injury and obviously had trouble with ball security in that Pacers loss with the brutal four turnovers in the final 209.
Oh, we're going to get to it.
You know, he's not an excuse maker, and he's always told me if I'm out there, I'm healthy enough to play. But I just said, you know, is this affecting your shot? You're 6-for-36. Before that, he had shot very well from three. Obviously, he had that incredibly hot month in December. And he said, look, it's acknowledging my shot, but I'm good enough to go out there and play. And I'm just focusing on trying to get to the cup, shooting free throws, shooting mid-range. The obvious follow-up question is, all right, but you shot 36 threes since the injury, and you've made six of them. He said those are open shots. You take the shots that the game gives you. So definitely something to talk about. Definitely a storyline to monitor. I assume you'll be wearing the brace. We're taping this on the day of the Charlotte game. I assume you'll be wearing the brace tonight. Last thing I'll say, because he played through a torn ligament in his non-shooting hand last year. Mm-hmm. And I asked him, because that injury kind of healed itself over time. He wore a brace at the start. He eventually ditched the brace and it kind of healed over time. I said, is this kind of injury that also can heal over time? Because people that don't know, talk to players, like you, these guys' knuckles and fingers and hands crushed. Mm-hmm. Guys are always slapping down at balls. Their fingers are mangled. So I said, is this the kind of thing that can heal on its own? Or if you get another blow, could it get worse? And he said, time will tell. So again, storyline and monitor for sure.
Tori, what do you think about Casey's reporting on it?
Well, Casey's reporting on it is fabulous as usual. I guess what I have to say is, Casey, you've said before how like when you've asked Zach about some of the decisions he makes in terms of the shots that he takes, that he's just like so confident in himself, he always thinks he can make it. He, like, even if he's missed however many, he never thinks that he won't make. Like, he never is not confident that he will make a shot. But at what point is it, like, kind of, like, delusion? Because at some point, I feel like part of being a great player is being like, okay, my shots aren't falling. I'm not 100%. It's probably in the team's best interest to either, unless I have where I don't have to dribble, like Tony mentioned earlier, or somehow getting the free throw line. It's probably in my best interest not to be jacking up these shots that aren't going in.
Yeah. So two things, shooters are going to shoot. Mm-hmm. That's number one. And number two, people focus on Zach is such a magnet for discussion and attention because he has moments where he's a flawed player, even though he's a max player. With ball security, et cetera, et cetera. However, he's never not a willing passer. If you watch him, his assist numbers are always decent. He makes the right play or tries to make the right play more often than not if he's getting double teamed. He doesn't get double teamed as much as DeMar, but when he does get double teamed, he's a very willing passer. So, I get it. It's a storyline now. I get that he's a fan target because he does have moments where he's a flawed player, but I've always been a Zach defender because I know he tries to play the right way. He's in a shooting slump right now. There's no other getting away around it. He's also shown over the course of December, he can get on a bender for an entire month. And I assume one of those is in his future as well.
Is me being out there helping the team?
Yes.
Yeah,
I know what you're saying, but
I 100% get it that he wants to be out there, that if he's playing, he's healthy. But again, he is a target.
Yeah.
Because of his status with the team and,
those were bad turnovers.
They were really bad turnovers.
Yeah. Just simple ball security.
Yeah. And if he can't handle that in terms of physically, I'm not saying that's any other thing, but physically, that impacts the team negatively.
I agree with that, but I'll just come back to this. He's not on the injury report. He's not even on the injury report as it's a middle finger on his right hand knuckle. So it's not even like Zach LaVine, probable right middle finger knuckle, you know?
Does it sound like it would ever get to that point with this particular
injury? That's why I asked him that. And, that's one blow away, possibly. I can't predict the future. I just know that he's currently not on the injury report. So this is something to monitor and talk about, but it's not to the level of, should he be sitting out games? He's not even on the injury report.
Yeah, that was my next question. Is how much is it on Billy then to say, okay, they don't need him to beat Charlotte?
Right.
Sit out.
One game, I'm not going to let that rest.
You think?
Nah. Hmm. Like I said, it was a cumulative thing last season when he played. The injury last season was way worse. The only difference was on his non-shooting hand. But if you remember in the direct aftermath of that injury last year, he had even worse issues with ball security. He could barely, when he was dribbling and he tried to grab the ball with two hands, it kept slipping out of his hands a lot. That one was really bad. It was a torn ligament. This is just a whacked knuckle. I'm not diminishing, easy for me to say for somebody else's body. But anyway, I think I get that we're talking about it on the podcast. Mm-hmm. I wrote about it. I asked him about it, but I don't think this is alarm bells. If Zach was playing at a little bit higher level, I don't think we'd be talking about it. And it's just, he's in the shooting
zone. Yeah, but we can talk about that.
Yeah, we can.
Yeah.
Those are bad turnovers. I wrote it.
Yeah.
No other way around it. Those are bad turnovers.
So if you're, he had 0 points in the fourth quarter, four turnovers. Would Billy ever consider benching Zach again?
He tried it.
Again? I'm glad you used the word again.
Yeah.
You saw how that other one went.
I know. That's why I'm not saying, would that ever happen again?
No. And
it shouldn't, probably.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it should. I'm just saying, if it gets, I don't know.
They need to win these games.
I know.
They need to win these games.
Yeah.
After a certain point, we had the conversation.
I guess I was just referencing back to your question of was he helping or hurting?
Right. As it was happening, I remember that it was a conversation, a debate of, for the long term health of this team, you can't do that.
All right. Yeah. Well, but let's broaden it out. I don't have the stats in front of me, but I can I know this. I don't need them. I don't need them that directly or acutely. But I'll just say that since the injury, which is in Washington, because I wrote this, I have this in memory. That was his first sub 20-point game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In Indiana. Also, he had had 7 turnovers combined in the 4 games before the Pacers game.
Yeah, it really was his first bad game in a long time. Mm-hmm.
14 points, 6 turnovers, high-profile turnovers, 4 in the last 2 minutes. So I get it, but let's broaden this out. Since the injury, he has played overall well. He just has not shot the ball well from three. And to his credit, in Indiana, this ties into what he told me. He had 6 free throw attempts in the first quarter.
Mm-hmm.
So he acknowledged that, hey, I'm not shooting well from three. Let's try to get to the rim and get to the line, get some easy points. I mean, he ended up going 0-for-7. You got to take open shots. The game tells you what shot to take. We all know that.
Mm-hmm.
So he took 7 threes. Those were the right shots.
Everyone's entitled to a bad game every now and then. I think it's just maybe more glaring because they're below 500 and fans are kind of getting
and because that was an awful anxious. Loss.
And because it was And when they lose for some reason, they lose. They don't just lose. They really like...
I think really that's probably,
I'm pulling out my phone because I keep going. I got to read a comment.
That's probably the most frustrating thing is it's not really so much about just the loss on the overall record. It's the manner that they're losing. When they get these losses, they're beating the good teams, right? They're competing with the good teams. But the issue is the teams that they're playing against should not be playing like that against the Bulls. They're better than them.
Yeah.
Flat out better than Indiana and Charlotte and Orlando and Atlanta. They're better than those teams. When they lose to these teams in the manner that they do, I think that is when the ire comes, and that's where you see the Twitters and the comments.
And then Zach's the easiest target because he's the best.
He's the max player.
He's the max player.
I'm glad you stopped yourself on best there.
I did. I said best, and then I said.
I broke my rule today.
Okay.
Never read the comments because I never read the comments
on Twitter.
Yeah, trust me, I never read the comments. I've already lost my sanity. If I read the comments, it would be really bad.
Yeah, why do you think I'm nuts all the time?
There you go. Exactly. You spend too much time on Twitter, like what we all do.
Fair.
But this one actually made me laugh. So I'm gonna give Nick Phillips some love at Nick from GE. Hopefully they'll bump up his followers. I clicked on it. He's got 5 followers.
I love that.
Here's what I tweeted. Hornets are 5-16 at home, the fewest home victories in the NBA. Ball and Hayward are questionable. This is another can't-miss opportunity for the Bulls, who, as of this morning, are closer to 13th place Orlando, 3.5 games, than 6th place Heat, 4 games. Yikes. His response to your guys' point. How do they rip our hearts out tonight, come out totally flat and lose by 25, or build a big lead and incomprehensibly blow it in the fourth?
Yeah, can't we just lose by like 9?
How good
like
is that?
Can't we just like really play?
Yeah, how good is that?
Yeah, great. Yeah,
that's
I'm going to follow. I'm going to be a 6th follower.
You're going to be a 6th follower.
That's the season for the Bulls.
I just want to lose by like 9 points and just like play okay and just, you know.
I just want to be a logical loss.
Yeah, exactly.
Like that's it. If I can rationalize, I can see how they could lose this game or stuff like that. It's not, at times it's not even logical how they're losing. It's like, what is going on?
They rarely play a normal game too. Have you guys
noticed that? Yeah.
Like, just like a normal, like I think the Paris game was about as close, and that was atypical because it was in Paris. Right. I mean, it was kind of a nondescript game against a bad team and they took care of business. Let's start to finish and won by, I can't remember, 8. 12, something like that.
Yeah, but it felt like more, kind
of. It felt more, yeah.
That was your run-of-the-mill game. They rarely play those kind of games.
Right, and if they're the team that they think they are and what this organization thinks they are, it's those should be the norm against those teams.
I'm so tired of
writing. I shouldn't be at the edge of my seat watching this Pacers game. I was literally like standing up.
You had a text in the group chat where you know just want to spend some time with your wife.
Like this is the perfect night. Like, man, I just want to kind of have pay attention. I want to spend time with my wife. I'm like, I know we're talking, but they may lose this game, and she's like, they're probably gonna lose, and I'm like, no, they're not.
Well, let's tie that into one of your points we were gonna talk in the pre-show meeting about how we. Because our last podcast earlier in the week, you, Jason, and I had our predictions for the trip.
Mm-hmm.
I rarely do this, but hold on. Did I not say the track record is the track record? You guys said 4-0. Yeah. I said 3-1 because I'm just expecting a letdown.
Was this the game you thought they were going to lose?
No, I just expected one letdown. So I actually could still be wrong because...
There could be multiple.
There you go. Man, if it's Charlotte, Orlando to me is a tough game on the road. That's a young athletic team. But if they lose to Charlotte, yikes. But anyway, the point being, I knew one was coming.
Yeah.
That was a bad one.
Any of those would have been bad against Orlando or Charlotte. I didn't expect the first one with no Halliburton. That one was entirely, I wasn't prepared to watch the entirety of that game, especially when he went up at half. I'm like, okay, I'll check back in.
Yeah, because I was doing the Hawks game after that.
Right.
And so I was like, okay, cool. Like, I'm going to be able to maybe, like, turn this one off a little early, like, go to, like, do the Hawks game. And then I was like, oh, this might go to overtime. And then it didn't. But it, like, I still ended up being really busy in the second half, more so than I would have liked to have been.
They had to cut the on the television broadcast. They kind of cut Billy's press conference a little short because they had to
get ready to go to Blackhawks. Will told me that.
What did you think overall? I think the biggest thing that came out on television was Zach not finding Caruso at the end of the basket. But your thought? What did Billy say about that loss? The newest worst one. How they're going to be able to fix their issues losing games that they're supposed to win.
Well, there's been no answers for that because we've been asking that all season. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's just he keeps talking about how they need to be a more consistent team. And the players tell us the same thing. Billy says it all the time, but nobody has any answers for why they're good against the elite teams and struggle against the so-called games you should win on paper. There's just too many examples of that. So we're not going to get that answer. I mean, to me, this team is what it is at this point. The minutia of that press conference, we first focused on the failed two inbounds plays. It did get broader after you guys cut away. Mm-hmm. And Billy actually got pretty animated said some pretty damning stuff just about, you know, we've got to embrace adversity and, you know, the same old theme, you know, too often we shrink in the face of adversity. And it's just too many examples of this. It's disappointing because, you know, I don't have a rooting interest, obviously. I'm an objective journalist, but you do see the potential in this team when they play so well against good teams. And with a three-game win streak, you know, as a beat writer, your instincts is to shade things one way or the other. And, we were all writing positive stories. Like, could this be the time they turn it around?
Is Patrick Williams
arrived? Right. Yeah. Right. But now it's just like, it just, there's always another example of this. And quite frankly, the track record is what it is at this point. I expect another letdown at some point, whether it's tonight, Saturday, in the future, what have you.
I mean, as long as they win three and then have the letdown, I'm fine with it. But
speaking of Patrick Williams, I thought Will on the postgame show brought up a good point that I wanted to discuss is how the others impact him. The things that Billy has wanted him to do, the things that we have given him praise for in terms of rebounding and attacking the glass, Will was making the point that when the Bulls go isolation, it's tough for Patrick to do the things that Billy wants him to do in terms of being an off-ball presence instead of standing. How much did you see of that, Casey, when you were watching that game? And why did it devolve to isolation basketball? And I get it. They're great offensive basketball players in Zach and DeMar. But how much does it impact when it goes to stand and watch basketball at the end of these games?
Yeah, and I talked to Will about this on the phone yesterday. We were catching up. I agree with that. But that's Patrick offensively. That doesn't impact his defensive rebounding. And, you know, he had those five early and then didn't grab another one. And I'm not saying that he should have grabbed more. I didn't watch the film to rewatch if he had an opportunity and missed a box out or did his job and it just caromed elsewhere. But, you know, you'd like to see still that number rise. I mean, he had the five early and then didn't have another one. But yes, to your point, I mean, the way they started that game, ball movement, you know, the ball found Vooch. He hit those two early threes, but it wasn't because they were targeting Vooch. It was just ball movement and the shot presented itself and the game tells you when to shoot. At the end, that's what they do. They resort to isolation ball more often than not. To me, it's a reflection of DeMar seeing it fall apart and going, well, I got this. And, you know, DeMar more often than not will provide a bucket when that is the case. Mm-hmm. The Pacers ended up being so aggressive with their trapping that he had to give the ball up, and that's when things started going awry because Zach had those turnovers. So, mm-hmm. it's a problem. Yeah. I don't have solutions. If they don't have solutions,
tell us the solutions,
you know, you're asking, you know, people ask me to play GM and coach.
Well, I mean, it would have helped if
you
would have seen Caruso under the basket, which he 100% should have, and had a good whole second to find him before he got the timeout.
Yeah, I'm in the extreme minority here. I had no problem with that timeout because it was so late in the 5 second count.
Yeah.
The cut was late. It's easy to say on Twitter, this is getting really technical here, but brain synapses like fire and quickly, and my guess is he'd already started to, at 3.5 or 4, started to go, I need to call a timeout.
Yeah. You know?
So I actually had zero problem with that timeout. Fair. I get it.
It's just annoying.
Oh, yeah, I get it. I saw the play. I mean, not in real time, but I saw the replay. I saw how open he was. I get it. I got no problem with that timeout. Billy had no problem with that timeout.
Yeah.
The bad one is you're burning your last timeout, and then you don't execute the inbounds play with one of your surest inbounder.
Yeah, Caruso also could have cut earlier because he was open but wasn't, like, in position to catch it. So he should have really cut there, like,
I don't think half a second
earlier.
That was a complete brain fart by the Pacers.
Yeah, I know that wasn't complete the design one. Play.
Like, I don't even think Alex thought he was going to be that wide open.
Yeah.
But the secondary look was to the rim.
Yeah.
If you can get the ball to, obviously, DeMar, which Zach's defender was shading towards DeMar, and he was getting doubled on the back end. It should have went to, and it's, again, annoying, but the secondary look before the timeout, it should have been at the rim. But, you know, he called the timeout.
Is what it
you
is,
get the
yeah.
reset, set to play. And
they still didn't get a shot off, so it doesn't matter. That's right. The main problem.
So,
man, that was a bad sequence.
Oh, my God. It was horrific. Really bad sequence.
Two inbound attempts and burning the last timeout and a turnover. Hey, now.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
So as we close this one. And
you had another larger point. Did
I?
Yeah. Check your notes, man. Notes. I'll stall.
I'm not checking
my Usually notes. We have numbers here or something, but I'll just.
I guess projections for the remainder of the week.
Well, I don't change my predictions. I said 3-1, okay. So let's go. I mean, if you can't beat a Charlotte team that has 5 home victories and might be without LaMelo Ball and Gordon Hayward, what are we doing here? Now, Orlando, I think, is going to be a tough one. So if I were to be a prediction changer, I would say 2-2 because I see that Orlando game. I'm just stating this publicly for the record. I see that Orlando game as being very difficult for them.
Mm. Tori?
I think they're going to win the next 3 because I'm an optimist.
3? Mm. So you got them.
Or next 2. I'm sorry. Okay. The next 2.
All right, because you got the Clippers already as a win, I was going to say.
No, I meant the next 2. I meant
I can see
I meant Orlando and
but
Charlotte.
But I can see him
beating. I can see the Clippers. Though.
Why
yeah,
would
yeah,
they?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Home game? Why
you know
can't
what?
They
they're
the
winning
Clippers?
The next 10. I'm calling
it now. That's all it takes in the East, by the way. That's all it takes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the thing,
that's the annoying thing, too. Just go on a streak.
Like, how many, every day, how many of you Bulls fans look up the standings every morning just to see the Bulls are, if they just fix it for a week, that they be in a conversation for not being in the play-in.
Well, they did it with those 3 straight gritty road victories after the Minnesota debacle, and then they came home and lost to Houston. timeliness alert, had the fewest road victories in the NBA. Tonight, they play the team with the fewest home victories.
Oh, I remembered what your other point was.
See, I knew there was a bigger one.
We were going to do a little Kobe remembrance segment, right?
See, yeah.
There we go. I was about to wrap up. I can't forget about Kobe.
All right.
It's anniversary of Kobe Bryant.
There should be a new word for anniversary. It should be like sadiversary.
Yeah, sadiversary is like a little.
No, but I get it. I mean, I've always thought that, like, when you when you acknowledge somebody's loss, what is a better word than anniversary? There should be like a made up word like sadiversary or something. That's kind of lame, isn't it?
I mean, sadiversary seems a bit cheesy, but
yeah.
Sadiversary.
Yeah, but there's definitely needs to be another word to remember.
Anyway, it's the date that Kobe Bryant passed 3 years ago today. Also, the date that Sekou Smith, longtime Atlanta-based NBA journalist, passed away 2 years ago. So kind of a big deal in the NBA. And
where were you guys when you heard the news about Kobe?
I was at church because it was on a Sunday, and my dad, he's up and he gets the word. I'm like, did Kobe Bryant just die? Like, everybody's like in shock and looking around like, wait, what? Everybody's checking their phone. And as soon as it was confirmed that he had passed, it was just like this bleak, just kind of dreary feeling across the congregation. And I mean, this is at church, and it's crazy to think that that person, that larger than life figure, and his daughter and all those people on that plane just passed instantly right there. And it stung because you had all these thoughts about what Kobe was going to be post-retirement.
Right.
What he was going to contribute to the world post-retirement, what he was getting ready to contribute to the world after basketball. That was so exciting to think about. And to have that just snuffed out in an instant was crazy, crazy. And it still kind of impacts. I mean, if I think about it too long, that meant Kobe Bryant is not here anymore.
It's definitely the biggest celebrity death of my lifetime, other than like Michael Jackson, which don't remember.
Mm-hmm. That was really well said. Where were you?
I was hungover at my friend's apartment. Mm. So I got a text from my sister.
Not as poignant as.
I was not. But
I appreciate the honesty.
I was at the club. No, I was at my friend's apartment and I got a text from my sister and she's like, "Oh my God, Kobe died." And I was like, "No, he didn't. Like, what are you talking about?" She's like, "Go on Twitter." And it was like right when TMZ had just reported it. And as soon as I knew it was TMZ, I knew it was real because peak journalism is TMZ. Say what you want, but they know what they're doing over there. I literally was like, could not, was just like scrolling on Twitter, like absolute shock. I was with my friend who like wasn't the biggest basketball fan. And I was like, okay, I need to get out of here and like go be with somebody who like knows the gravity of like what's happening. So I like went to my sister's apartment and we were just like watching the news coverage like all day after that.
It was an all day thing.
It was all day. Oh, yeah. On every channel. Yeah. Mm-hmm. As it obviously.
So I had just closed the car door. To drive my then 3 years ago, sixth grader to a youth basketball game that I was coaching. So I got to be honest, I had to take a moment because I was saying to myself, here's Kobe Bryant, albeit flying in a charter helicopter, mm-hmm. going to coach his daughter in a basketball game. And here I am closing a car door to go coach my younger son in a basketball mm-hmm. game. So I had to process it on a personal level and then shift into professional mode because obviously I knew there was going to be a lot of work. Not like I'm complaining. I'm saying like that's how we're wired as journalists. You start thinking of the story. And so I remember I got a hold of Tom Thibodeau that day who dates back to Kobe as a teenager and wrote a story for our website. 3 years ago? Yeah, 2020 I was here. So... like everybody else, I had professional and personal responsibilities. And my son picked up on me kind of getting silent for a second and asked, what's up? And I told him. And actually, I said, I might have said, well, I'll tell you after the game because I didn't want him like processing that while he was going to play youth basketball right. himself. And so I told him after the game. Like everybody else, pretty impactful stuff. And I was really thankful to Tom for sharing. And to your point, Tony, as we wrap this up, Tom nailed exactly what you just said. Like, that's where Tom's focus was. As much as I am thankful for our basketball association and appreciate what he meant to the sport of the NBA, what stopped Tom in his tracks was all that he was going to contribute to society and the world moving forward. So Tom was really eloquent about that. So, yeah, it's a day, man. And I'm glad the NBA acknowledges it as much as it does because he should be remembered.
Yeah. Yeah. Kobe is going to, you know, be a staple. I know in my life, like when I have children or my nieces and nephews, Kobe Bryant will definitely be a topic of conversation because he has to be. Forced himself to be.
Yeah.
undeniable. And I want to get Casey's point of view of Sekou because strictly my I think I booked Sekou a couple times a couple shows, but I admired his work and his reporting and his personality when he was on shows. I'm a fan of personalities, so When you thought of NBA, NBA coverage as a whole, you typically thought about what Woj, you know, Shams, and for me, it was Sekou. He was so connected to the league that you had to go to his coverage. And I appreciated reading him and watching him and listening to him when he was here.
Yeah, so I go way back with Sekou, and I got a smile on my face now just because, man, what a personality and what a presence. And, I mean, you've seen in the media world how much he's still remembered. He's on Twitter a lot today. I was lucky enough, it was actually my first trip to Atlanta this year since the pandemic. They've renamed the media room after Sekou. The Atlanta Hawks have done just an amazing job acknowledging him. There's a scholarship in his name. The media room's named after him. There's a nice photo tribute about his career and his impact. And tying it to professional level, just his the ease with which he transitioned from being a newspaper guy to, you know, his NBA TV role with Turner. Mm-hmm. Not to equate our situations at all, but I was a longtime newspaper guy. I've obviously been very lucky and thankful and fortunate to come over here and add a little TV element to my repertoire, but not anywhere near the level of Sekou. But, man, he just made that look easy, and it's not. I mean, he was so good on NBA TV, such a versatile reporter and writer. But every time I think of Sekou, I get a smile on my face because just a warm, magnetic personality. And
good dude, too.
Fantastic. Can he call play-by-play?
He can do anything, man. So, you know, I did not know the family. Like some people, like Mark Spears is very close to him. Mm-hmm. I did not know his family, but I did send a video, spoken word tribute. The family had asked for that I heard was received. And there's a, you know, his alma mater's got a scholarship in his name. The Hawks have a scholarship in his name. His legacy lives on. So great dude, man. Miss you, Sekou. You're the man.
RP Sekou. Thank you, guys. That was it. That's it for the podcast.
That was a good one.
That was a good
one. Tori, you got to be on more often.
Yeah, Tori.
Really?
Yeah. You can come back. I said it's okay.
Yes.
Expect Tori to be with us going forward on the Bulls Talk podcast. We appreciate you. Thank you. Thanks to Casey Johnson. Thanks to Claire Philpy. And we thank you for watching and listening to the Bulls Talk podcast brought to you by Toyota. We have an episode 2 times a week. So you catch us on Apple, Spotify, YouTube. Make sure you watch it. I got this dope shirt on. Tori got her dope jacket on. Casey,
not sure what I'm wearing.
Looks great.
We appreciate you guys. We catch you guys next week. Peace.
One, two, three, four. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.